Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Not going to lie, Josh Brown, this could be the intro. We don't know what this podcast is. It's not the News Lads anymore because the News Lads have gone south. They've gone home for the winter. They've spread their wings, and now any news-based content will just be its own separate video, which means that we get to talk about more things across more videos more of the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you know, as much as I enjoy doing the News Lads, I think it does make sense because in every single episode of the News Lads, we'd say, well, we just mentioned in this video or we mentioned the other day. We cover the news too much to make it its own individual topic, I think, Scott. But you know what? I don't mind. I don't mind doing anything as long as it's with you on this podcast same every way. Monday.
You might say with the News Lads that we leapt in and called it the News Lads and kept going, made some artwork, got some news, got it going before we cleared it with anybody, and now it has to be changed. So, you know, not to worry, it's just the way the world works. But in the reality of splitting a lot of the news stuff out, it frees up a little slot that we can call our own. We don't have a name for this, and we did spend most of this morning trying to think of some way to title this. We got close, I think close, with Expansion Chat, but then that's also... I don't know if that's actually terrible. So we're not going to title this one, and we'll just see what people say. If you want to give us a name for whatever me and Josh's banter could be called, please give us a shout over on social media. And because this show is going to be in addition to the regular podcast, goes out on Wednesday, and then we've got the Untitled Banter Pod on Friday. But all of this is to say that I thought me and you could have a little bit of a reminisce on just EA and Star Wars, because it's kind of wrapped now that all the Lucasfilm games have come back and they've sort of handled... you know, various sort of Lucas-based properties and handing them all out. It kind of bookends EA's time with the Star Wars IP. So I guess initial thoughts before I start breaking some stuff down, what words come to mind when you think of EA's time with Star Wars?
Vacuum of crack. I don't know, man. Like, when it comes to EA's tenure with this license, it's just so weird. Like, we had, what, 7 in a bit years of exclusivity with them. Yes. We got some good games, but I feel like what they promised back in the day, back in 2013, 2012, or whenever it was when they picked up the license, mm-hmm. just completely outshone what we got. And yeah, I love Bob Battlefront 2 became. Yes, I love Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
I love Bob Battlefront. He's a
Bob
good lad.
Battlefront. Yeah, what a good lad. Bob Battlefront, Ian Jedi Fallen Order, both great lads in my opinion. but I mean, they messed it up, didn't they, for the most part? They just rushed out Battlefront 1. They completely killed Battlefront 2 dead in the water when it first came out with all the microtransaction stuff. Mm-hmm. They canned some of the most promising titles, like Visceral's game. I know these are way more many words than you asked for, but when it comes to Star Wars, it's such a... controversial thing, and it should have been a home run, Scott. Yeah. It should have been an open goal, but they just managed to miss kick it like Beckham, just like sky it straight over the bar.
And, I feel like of all the IP, of all the different franchises that you could reapproach across the 2010s, I mean, do you remember when we first got word that Star Wars was coming back? I was still working at What Culture, but it was right at the beginning. I think you would have been a freelancer or something back then. But
not
I remember
then, I don't think, you know, I think I was okay. even later to that. That's how long it's been.
Because I remember when our boss sent me the picture of, it was that first shot of everybody sitting next to each other where it was like Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels and all the new people and Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, and it was like, oh my god, it's coming back. And I wrote it for the website at the time. I was like, oh my god, I'm getting to like break that there's new Star Wars. Not that I'm leading the story, but you know what I mean. And thinking back to then, it was like, well, they've got so much to pull from. They've got all the different TV series and the comics, and obviously there's the old school movies, and the prequels went wrong, so surely they'll know how to do it properly. And then on the game side, it was like, well, EA's just signed this deal with Disney, and EA is going to be going forward with stuff. And back then, EA weren't really they weren't very negative. Like, it was like they're the guys that did the Lord of the Rings games, and they'd already, you know, helped sort of, they used their powers for good. They made the Simpsons games and the Bond games, and this will be brilliant. And then, like, as I've made notes for this little chat, like, you know, they did two games in 6 years. It took them, like, they did the Battlefront one, which, like you said, was really, really rushed. And it just, that whole thing was rushed to the point where the version of Rogue One's DLC that's in there was, like, based on assets that were from the original version of the movie, because it got recut, and it's a whole thing. And there's a whole mission-based, it's just, it seems like... prioritizing the multiplayer stuff so much for that 2015 one. Obviously, they didn't have a campaign for it. And then Battlefront 2, that had the whole gambling casino for kids thing. But either way, it wasn't until 2019 that you got Jedi Fallen Order and then Star Wars Squadrons last year, which we can get back to them in a sec. Because for me, I feel like whoever's at the top of like organizing all this stuff hated the idea that Jedi Fallen Order and Squadrons were not recurrent spending models, because neither of those games got any marketing whatsoever, especially Squadrons. You would barely even know it was out. I think it's just insane. And so when I look back on those years, it's just, I don't know, it took all of Battlefront 2 before like the behemoth of EA even recognized there was a problem. Otherwise, they would have just monetized the living hell out of it.
It's so weird the way EA approached it, because, you know, it almost felt like they were carrying this license as a burden. They weren't using it to, you know, make great games or even make a lot of money, you know what I mean? They just felt like they had to turn out these games. And even towards the end, when they were cancelling titles, you know, the reports from Kotaku or whatever, they were saying that executives were apparently just going, look, cancel this big project, work on some small ones, get those out, you know, we'll do it as cheaply as possible. Money. And what a strange approach to have. Like, why would you just want to fart something out when you could be making really great games that people love? Like, they just drop the ball over and over again. And yes, it is partly to do with the trajectory the company was on in general. You know, it's not in isolation to the Star Wars brand. You look across their studios and they're going to people like BioWare and going, literally going, where's our FIFA? Where's your FIFA? You know, give me FIFA, give me Ultimate Team. So in that kind of type of culture, I think Star Wars just kind of got swallowed up in a case of mismanagement and developers not knowing what they could do with it. And it is telling that, you know, the likes of Fallen Order, even though it didn't get as much of a push as a Battlefront, like, it sold really well. It sold beyond EA's own internal expectations, even, and it resonated with fans, and it kind of just showed them, to me, what they should have been doing, you know, all along, what Visceral's game could have been, what any of these potential titles could have capitalized on and become a huge success. It reminds me so much of just how Square Enix handled the Avengers, you know, like, they've given this massive property. It looks like an open goal. And yet what's produced is mishandled and ultimately kind of weirdly soulless. Like, even though these franchises, these big IPs, like, they're obviously these money making machines, but I would argue even the sequel trilogy, you know, has a lot of personality to it, has some soul to it, in a way something like Marvel's The Avengers just doesn't, in the way that something like the first Battlefront just is lacking in. It's odd. Yeah.
The thing that I miss the most is just full on genre diversity. Like, I think of Star Wars and 2000s games, I think of the Jedi Knight games. I think of Jedi Power Battles on the PS1. And I think of like the big top down RTS strategy games. I forget the hell they were actually called, but I remember seeing my friends play them. And it's just, I immediately think of that variety of stuff, like Star Wars Bounty Hunter and Knights of the Old Republic, and like all these titles that, you know, you put them right next to each other and they're immediately differentiable. Like, you know, like, I went back to Bounty Hunter the other day because I was like watching Mandalorian, and I was like, I want to shoot some lads with a wire and then drag them along the floor. And you can't do that, but I thought you could. So I played it for a little bit and it's all right. But either way, it's a third person thing. And, you know, next to KOTOR, it's like, you know, within the space of a few years, I mean, I think I just Googled this before, but like Bounty Hunter was 2002. I think KOTOR was around about 2006-ish. You know, and you still had like I mean, obviously it was because it wasn't tied to EA, but like still, I kind of thought they would have done that. They would have just said, well, we have access to these rights. We're still going to make an absolute mint anyway. We're still EA. We have tons of teams under our wing. But they didn't. I mean, one of the cancelled games was, they had Criterion working on the remnants of Project Orca, which is like a big open world thing that they initially had EA Vancouver on, and then they canned that, and then they gave they restarted it with Criterion and some remaining members of EA Vancouver, and they called it Project Viking. So it's like, why did you have Criterion working on, assumingly like a racing game or something vehicle based? Because there was even, I'm just thinking of stuff now, there was even, was it Star Wars Demolition was like their take on like Twisted Metal? They did like a whole vehicle car combat thing. And it's like, yeah, okay, maybe that's not going to make as much as Battlefront, but all those titles cumulatively probably would have got up there. Like, you could have had a really cool polished car combat game or a vehicular thing, which they kind of got back to with Squadrons. But just wasting these teams that they have under their wing and sticking to one type, it's like, okay, what's the most money we can make? First-person shooter. What's a recurrent spending model? A card-based loot shooter thing. Let's do that. And then just... it just seems so empty. Like, I Googled the other games that they cancelled, and alongside Project Orca and Project Viking were the two titles from Visceral, which, you know, Project Ragtag, it's the thing that Amy Hennig was working on, follow-up to, you know, the person who created Uncharted and Legacy of Kain. You had her under your wing, and you cancelled that game, and then you shut down the studio. So it's like, the two games from Visceral were Yuma and Project Ragtag, and both of them got cancelled, and then they shuttered Visceral as well. So it's like... even if you're doggedly in the pursuit of endless money, I just don't know how you look that many gift horses in the mouth, punch them and put them down instead.
I know. I mean, the biggest one, you know, in my opinion, is one that we were talking about for years before it was finally rumored earlier today that Knights of the Old Republic is coming back. But I mean, your EA, you have BioWare right there making Anthem and Mass Effect Andromeda when they could be making a new Knights of the Old Republic, you know, a new like single player RPG focus, not an MMO, you know, a proper sequel to what they'd started before. And it's like, why did that never even enter the... you greenlit all these other games and yet you never even gave that a chance to be prototyped. I don't understand the approach of it. I mean, look, you know, if you go back through the history of Star Wars games, like you said, there is huge variety, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I loved every one of the LucasArts games, you know what I mean? I didn't love The Force Unleashed 2. I like the vast majority of them. Or whatever, but... I did appreciate that they were trying different stuff all the time. You could, like you said, have a Bounty Hunter alongside a Knights of the Old Republic, alongside The Force Unleashed, alongside Jedi
Super
Starfighter.
Bombard Racing, Josh Brown.
Yeah, you know that pod racing, you know, like, you know, whatever you want. There was a bunch of stuff being flung at the wall. And it was all distinctly Star Wars, you know. Yep. It was all really interesting and fascinating. In full variety, mate. It was good.
I just popped for a sec there because you said the racer thing. And I forgot about those games. I rebought Episode One Racer on my Switch. It's brilliant. They upressed it. And it's like, it's nice and crisp and it runs at like 60 FPS. And it's just, why did they not? Oh my God, all the thoughts. Why did they not get Criterion to do a pod racing game? That would have been the best thing ever. You could have had Burnout style takedowns with like you sideswipe a guy and it cuts to him as all the engine parts fly off.
Well,
what were they doing, mate?
The reason is, to nick a phrase from one Jim Sterling, that wouldn't have made them all the money in the world. You know what I mean? That might have made them some money, but it's not going to be a smash hit that a first-person shooter, microtransaction-riddled Battlefront is potentially going to be. And I think that's the issue, and that's what I'm looking forward to in this new era of Star Wars. Mm. That, you know what? I want EA to continue making Star Wars games, because like I said, they've made some good ones, and I do hope that they have at least recognized why it didn't take off in the mistakes they made. I want to see a Jedi Fallen Order 2. I even want to see a Battlefront 3. But I'm really excited to see other developers, other publishers get their hands on the material and allow other people to make, you know, Insomniac Spider-Man, but for Star Wars. You know, I want to see that happen in one form or another with a Mandalorian game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that they pick Lucasfilm Games. I hope that they pick good partners, good collaborators to bring these to life.
It feels like a lot of this whole mandate is to sort of right the ship in that regard. Like it's to restore quality. It's because it's so easy. I mean, Battlefront 2 came back so strong. Like I would highly recommend Battlefront 2 today. Like I think it is one of the best Star Wars games ever made now, but it took a long time to get there, like at least a year or two before they completely stripped out all the microtransaction stuff and they made an actual decent progression system and a good unlock system. But at least that game's visuals and all that kind of stuff was always kind of held up. But overall, though, like going forward, like let's talk about like prediction stuff and I guess like where we're at with Star Wars, because we're both lifelong Star Wars fans. And I think me and you fractured after The Last Jedi because obviously, and then Rise of Skywalker, I think both of us were like, oh God, this is like corporately mandated box ticking stuff, which I didn't like Rise of Skywalker at all. I've come to really appreciate Last Jedi. Not that I never did as an artistic statement before, but it wasn't for me. But I think even after Rise, you can kind of hold Last Jedi up even more and be like, oh my God, at least this got made. Point being though, that going forward, like one of the biggest things for Battlefront 2 was bringing back the prequel stuff, like, and just saying like, hey, it's okay to be fans of these movies, because there's an entire generation of people who love the prequels. And it wasn't until all those levels and ships and characters got added to Battlefront 2 that I saw the paradigm sort of shifted around the prequels, and it was okay to say you like the prequels. Which, having gone back to them recently, the dialogue, just don't listen to anything anyone says. But at least the fights are brilliant. Whatever, there's a lot of positives for them. Point being though, do you ever think that they will do that thing for the sequel trilogy, for the newest trilogy? Do you think there's salvageable stuff there to build games around, or do they play the nostalgic vote and almost do what Mandalorian is doing and just saying, hey, don't worry, it's comfort blanket time, let's do old school stuff?
I think we'll get a mix. I mean, the sequel trilogy, for me, there's still plenty of salvageable aspects in there. There's plenty of interesting characters, plenty of interesting worlds to follow.
Do a Kylo game.
Video games. You could do a Kylo game. I want to see Adam Driver's lovely face headlining a video game.
I don't think
game.
He'll ever come back. I think him and Oscar Isaac have literally ran for the hills. Like, they'll do anything other than go back to Disney, but yeah.
John Boyega too, I think. I think most of the sequel cast are like, nah, I think I'm all right on that one, big Mickey Mouse. But when it comes to like the prequel stuff, I think that is fascinating, because like you said, with Battlefront 2 bringing back the prequel era, like, we've seen that much more in the general Star Wars mediascape now, that kind of almost rehabilitation of the prequels. Because I remember, I'm old enough to remember when that was just the most obvious punching bag, obvious comedic open goal on the planet. Like, if you were doing a comedy YouTube video on the prequels, even as like late as 2010, that was easy hits. But I noticed, you know, for me, the big realization that people, you know, love them, genuinely love them, was around the time of The Last Jedi, and people were talking up how much they love the prequels, because obviously loads of people, myself included, grew up with them as Star Wars. And now I do think we've had the kind of this reflective lens that's been long enough where we've had the sequel trilogy, we've had a bunch of spin-offs, we've had Solo, A Star Wars Story, we've kind of cast our mind back.
Forgot that even happened, but
yeah. Exactly, mate. We've kind of cast our mind back and gone, the prequels are not great movies, but they had great things in them. They had a lot of ambitious ideas. George Lucas might not be the most competent filmmaker, but like, he did bring a lot to the table, and a lot of that stuck, and a lot of that is worth interrogating and, you know, recontextualizing with series like The Mandalorian or sequels or video games or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's off limits when it comes to video games, and I'd want to see them do something interesting with the prequel era. I don't know what I'd want them to do with it, but if you do like a story game based in that time period, I would love it. Because I will tell you this, as much as there have been great games set between episodes, you know, 3 and 4, and now between 6 and 7. Like, I'm sick of those in-between periods, man. Like, there's only
really
stuff you can do in that liminal space. Like, it's cool from the stuff we've got, but you can't just keep setting stories in there, because it's just like, how packed was this time period, this small in-between time period? Like, I understand why they've always gone to that, but for me, I'm like, you've got scope. You can do anything you want, man. You don't need to be limited to just those small finite eras.
The thing that it's interesting reappreciating the prequels, because I think they got so reappreciated in amongst the Disney era because we were so starved for genuinely original ideas. And I think that kind of goes for a lot of media, especially in video games, where it's just the biggest, most safest bet is the only one that gets placed. And I think that there's almost a retroactive premium on, like, you look back at the prequels and it's like, how the hell did he get to make that? He did this insane like allegory for sort of like Hitler's rise to power through the guise of Palpatine and senators and everything else, and like had so much politics stuff in episode, especially in episode 2, that I feel like now would just get completely severed by a studio, even like, especially Disney, would just be like, well, this isn't going to work for the kids, so let's cut that out. But I mean, and that kind of gives it this like sort of retroactive value, because we've got across the board, we've got so far away from new ideas and everything's just safe. At least it feels like that way to me. Like, when this is a separate thing, but like when Indiana Jones got announced, the new game, I just went, oh, yeah, sure. I just sort of cringed and went, oh God, like, can you not do a new character that happens to have a whip and go, oh, it's inspired by Indiana Jones, but we're going to do a new thing.
Nathan Drake. So we can't have another person inspired.
But he's good,
isn't
he? Nathan Drake's lovely. He's got all these little phrases and everything, got new stories. He's got an iconic hat or whatever. Oh, I just don't. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's always snakes. I just make something new. But,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Anyway, the point, yeah, to sort of roll that back around to like the newer movies, like, you know, you sort of said like, yeah, like that is like furtive ground. Do you see them doing a Battlefront 3 that leads with those movies? Like, is it just too early to try and pretend, quote unquote, that all three of those newer movies are as furtive ground as the prequels? Or is it just, I don't know, do they just sort of keep going with the old stuff and mine that again?
I'll still take
a pod racer, is what I'm saying.
I think with the new games, you can have like a blend, you know what I mean? I think it could lead with the sequels. I mean, yeah, it didn't end on the greatest note, but like I said, man, there's still a lot of investment in those movies.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Josh Brown, you said you're not a fan of the interstitial stuff, but what if they did something in between episode 7 and 8 and you got to follow Luke more, or between 6 and 7 and you follow his degradation down, or at least him choosing to siphon himself off, and you really delve in Naughty Dog style into the philosophy of the Jedi Order and him breaking away.
You've raised a bigger question, Scott, in my opinion, and that is, do you want to see these games focus on, you know, the big legacy characters like Luke and interrogate those years? I would love to see that. I would definitely play the crap out of that game. And I don't like it in Star Wars games where they sort of cameo people like Luke and Han. And it feels weird. It feels like they're either shoehorned in or they don't belong there or they're doing something weird with the canon.
Remember Han Solo's beard in Battlefront 2? Yeah, he just popped up. I've got beard now.
Bad beard, man. It wasn't a good beard. That's exactly what I was referring to. I didn't want to throw the devs under the bus for that one, but that is exactly what I'm referring to. But I would love to see, you know, those legacy characters doing well in video game form. Like, I'd love to see a Boba Fett game. I'd love to see I would take a Han Solo scoundrel game, you know what I mean? I would even take a Han Solo scoundrel game with Alden Ehrenreich's Han Solo as the lead, you know what I mean?
Because no!
That could be all right. No, Scott, it could be okay. They could do a better prequel in video game form than...
Well, I tell you what,
film cut in movie version.
I tell you what's an interesting thing for all the interstitial stuff. It's weird because I'm going through Clone Wars at the minute. I've never watched it before. And I saw little tiny bits of it back in the 2000s and I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And then just over the years, again, this whole retroactive premium on originality on the Lucas era, whatever. I was like, I'm going to watch Clone Wars. And it is weird how much Clone Wars makes you want to watch episode 2 and 3. And it gives a lot more weight to the likes of Grievous and Dooku and their relationship and what they're going for. And it fleshes out a lot of the wider galactic battles that are going on around the Clone Wars, like planetary stuff, like specific species and specific ways that like these different sort of species were living and how the Empire affects them or the potential Empire affects them. And that sort of stuff, I was like, oh, that's a really cool hand to play. Like, that's a weird thing. And obviously it's Dave Filoni and now with The Mandalorian, it's like, there's obviously sort of like still slotting things in. And retroactively, you can enhance that body of work. You can enhance the prequels by bringing all this stuff in. Like Anakin, divorced from Hayden Christensen's performance, is a really great character. And it's like, I mean, he's still solid enough in the prequels on paper, but obviously the acting, those scenes, the things that we saw weren't great. And so there is all that to sort of deal with, but I wonder how much the games can do that stuff too. And I guess that would also be, I don't even know if they still have the whole Star Wars story group. You know, they had those five dudes that were meant to be overseeing everything, that as soon as Last Jedi came out, it was like, well, I guess not then. Because like Rian Johnson just did his thing, which is great. He was allowed to do that. But still, it wasn't bounced off this like, you know, think tank. And I kind of wonder if the games going forward are going to plug in essential character building stuff, do they have to go through some weird cross medium think tank to make sure it's the right type of Star Wars or whatever? Like, well, is Disney going to get in the way of this stuff?
Well, we don't know the full story, but I know there was a report that came out after Jedi Fallen Order came out where I can't remember who wrote it. It doesn't really matter. Where someone was like talking about the development of it and how much they had to bounce off like Lucasfilm in terms of their design, about how they even had to convince Disney or Lucasfilm to allow them to make a Jedi game to begin with, because apparently they pitched it and then they were like, well, why do you want to do that? Don't do that. We're very kind of protective of people who, you know, use the Jedi in video games, especially as main characters.
Do you know what's hilarious, Josh Brown? Do you know how much 2020 has messed with your mind? That was me. That was my report from when me and Ewan talked to the people who were making Jedi Fallen Order.
We got the exact same thing.
When me and Ewan went down to London and we played Fallen Order for the first time, I asked that exact question because I was so curious how much free reign they had. And as I asked him and I said, how much did you guys have to bounce stuff off the Lucas company? And his face just went, oh, everything. Like, he was just like, every single thing. Like, and he said like everything, like the design of a ship, every way someone's going to say something, it all has to be, it's like a feedback system. They sort of go, we're going to change this, and you send it off at the end of the day, and then they tell you back in the morning, and then you change it again. So yeah, carry on. But it was that.
Well, no, I'm just saying that, like, obviously it's, you know, it takes a lot of effort, you know, not just to build a great Star Wars game, but to get all of this stuff approved, you know, to make sure it is the type of Star Wars that the people who own Star Wars actually want. And I assume that will be really difficult if you are going to use like legacy characters as your main heroes. Like, I imagine the process of getting a Luke Skywalker game greenlit and made, for instance, would be just ridiculous, and how many story revisions you're gonna have to do, how many character revisions you're gonna have to do to make sure everything is approved. So I wonder whether that's why we see so many of these interstitial games. And I wonder if we see anything. Have you been keeping up with the High Republic at all? Because that's a whole era that Disney and Lucasfilm is now like ushering in. And they have mentioned video games in the past. So I do imagine that we'll see some High Republic set games, and that's cool because I don't know anything about that.
There's the stuff that BioWare did. I think that's the Old Republic. There's like all the there's the cutscenes that BioWare put together where it's really badass. Like, there's all these crazy, super, extremely over the top anime style Star Wars fights, backflips, and catching lightsabers midair, and lots of really cool stuff. Those BioWare cutscenes are absolutely badass. So I know like vaguely of that, but like, to me, my sort of like cynical brain, when they announced they were doing that, it was like, oh, it's set, I think it's 800 years before or 600 years before or something like that.
Which
it's
is a few hundred years.
Yeah, the new movies, like the whole new thing. It's like a few hundred years before. And my cynical brain was just like, okay, so you're getting as far away, you're going back over as much as possible. It's like, we're not going forward because we have no idea what we're doing with the First Order and all that stuff. So we're just going to go backwards until a time of purity when it was like, these are your good guys, these are your bad guys. And then we go with that. I assume though that is way more fertile ground for video games because it's way more cut and dry as to who you should play as and flesh it out that way. So I guess it lends itself more to games that way.
I would like to see more original characters, you know. I mean, Kyle Katarn was such a big sort of presence, you know what I mean? And now we've got Cal Kestis from Jedi Fallen Order and stuff like that. These are really interesting and fascinating characters to follow. So I wouldn't be entirely against it if the video games were allowed to be, you know, like these original pieces playing with someone else's toys, you know what I mean? I think that does bolster creativity as well, because it's not someone just going to a bunch of devs because they've just signed a contract. Like, here's a bunch of established characters that I don't care if you like them, you know what I mean? You're gonna have to play with them. Here's a bunch of worlds that you need to get in there. Here's a bunch of mandatory features or set pieces or whatever. Like, go for it. Again, like comparing it to the Avengers, that's how that game feels like it was made. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a fan of Tony Stark. We've got to have a game with Tony Stark in it. So do your best. Right. Maybe if you just give a team the Star Wars license and go, like, you have carte blanche or as much as you can get past Lucasfilm Story Group or whatever to make an original game. You can build your own characters. You can flex within the space. Like, maybe that's a better approach to take rather than be like, He's a bunch of iconography, you know. He is that dude with the weird beard. He's back. Han Solo, you know him.
That's the thing that worries me a bit with Star Wars, or makes me feel like I've seen it all, because when you've seen the end of Mandalorian season two, or you know the thing. When that happened, I couldn't believe it was happening. Because I didn't know it was coming at all. I didn't read any story spoilers. It was just happening in real time. I was watching the episode. And I literally said, they haven't. Like, no. And I couldn't believe it. And there was a mix. I had a mix of, oh my God, that's really cool that they're doing it. And then, but also, that's the easiest, safest thing you could have done. Like, that is the most direct fan service you could have done. And obviously, we're talking about Luke Skywalker returning. And then I was like, when he took the hood off, I thought the deep fake face thing didn't look great. And I kind of wonder about that stuff. And it's like, I don't want Star Wars to be limited. And something like that, as much as it's immaculate fan service, if you're into it, felt not earned in a way. Like, it just felt too easy to go down that route. And I don't know. I don't want it to always be that stuff. And like you say, you mentioned like the classic characters, and they can steer into that stuff. But it's like, what is Star Wars now? Like, we have at least two specific ideas of what Star Wars is. There's an entire swath of people who hated the prequels. There's an entire swath of people who grew up with them who are like, no, we like this stuff and we want to flesh this side of the timeline out. And it's like that idea of like pleasing Star Wars fans. Well, we've got 40 years now of like people growing up with it. 50 years now?
50 years.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's closer to that.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it's just that idea of, like, you've got so many potential, like, you know, nodes to hit to, like, please people that I wonder how that goes. I guess to bring it back to the game side, too, like, I guess alongside that stuff, do you think the age of the microtransaction side of it is gone as well? Do you think that's too poisoned our well?
No way. From the press release that the Lucasfilm Games, such a strange name. Why would you name a game company Lucasfilm Games?
LucasArts.
LucasArts Games. Anything that doesn't make me fall off myself trying to say it. But when they were talking about the Ubisoft game, like, they even referenced that they want people to be investing in these games for like hundreds of hours, which to me means that they want, you know, live services and microtransactions and stuff. And I think if you give it to a company like Ubisoft, especially the first one, like, you know what you're going to get from them. You're going to get an open world big game that has microtransactions in it, you know, not as egregious as EA with Battlefront 2, but certainly you're not going to be like shying away from them. You're not going to make a single player focused, only one and done experience. You know what I mean? In my opinion, from the way that they were talking and the quotes that, you know, you can pull from it. It just felt like they were wanting to chase the next big thing. As I'm sure that won't be every single game, but I don't think suddenly just because EA is off the Star Wars license that we're going to get microtransaction free games that are character driven and, you know, for the player or anything.
It's just that is a wider problem with gaming overall. Like, it's just every big title. It's like, well, you're going to play this for 50 to 100 hours? No, I'm not. I'm never going to. I might give you one run through, like a Witcher 3, a Cyberpunk, like, you know, like an 80 to 100 hour game if it's a big enough deal. But how many different ones of those titles can the average person juggle? Like, the opinion from up top seems to be like, well, you can juggle all this stuff and we are the only game. Like, The Division is like the only third person shooter. So you dedicate all your time to that. And I just think that if you're literally, if you go down the business mode, business mentality for it, then the brand is valuable. So it's like, why wouldn't you make a series of 10 to 15 hour games that you can sell for £40 to £50 if you want? And as long as the gameplay is enjoyable enough, it's replayable enough, there's a set of mechanics in there or whatever, then that will make you more money overall.
Well, I don't know, man, because you can look at something like Fallen Order, which was, for the most part, really good about all of that stuff. And that sold really well. Like I said, it beat expectations. But even then, I bet it didn't make $2 billion in revenue like Call of Duty made last year, you know what I mean? In part thanks to the microtransactions from Warzone and Cold War and anything else. And FIFA was obviously second on that list of highest grossing, most profitable games. I think they made over $1 billion last year. So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, Jedi Fallen Order, which, yeah, might sell 12 million copies, make a lot of money, but I'm sure the people at the very top are like, well, we could have our own Call of Duty, couldn't we?
That's what they keep chasing. Like, you mentioned the Avengers, that's what they were chasing entirely. Like, the loot system in that is invisible because clearly it was added way after everything else was done because they want their little hamster wheel recurrent spending model thing. But at some point, the people at the top of these particular you know, companies, the decisions being made are in the industry for the wrong reasons. Like if it's literally just to add zeros to your bottom line, I get that. Like obviously, and to some degree, you're telling business people to not do business, especially if the average gamer, the mainstream audience is responding to it to the tune of billions of dollars. Yeah. But there's also a way, hopefully a way to make that palatable, like and not have it nickel and dime you left, right and center when you're just trying to enjoy your game. But as you know, Star Wars is in a precarious place. And I think that it's weird having Battlefront 2, everyone kick off at that so much, you would assume means that they would avoid that stuff for a while.
Yeah.
But is that while just the last 2 years already, the last 3 years, I guess, and now it's going to be like full bore Battlefront 3 and it's get your deluxe Rey skin. This one's great.
It could be, man. Like it's like not to put it down on it right at the very end of the podcast, but I'm excited for the future of Star Wars in the video game space. Like I said, I'm so pleased that EA continues to make their games, but we also get to have new experiences from a bunch of different publishers, a bunch of different developers. But at the same time, I also shared this same excitement when EA got the exclusive license. And I said, well, EA is a really good publisher. They make really high profile, big budget games. They've got great developers under their wing. They've got DICE, they've got Visceral, they've got BioWare. Mm-hmm. Who knows what they could come up with? They failed me back then and it could fail again now, but I've got to be optimistic. This could be Scott Telford, A New Hope is all I'm saying. Boom! 1977's A New Hope. This
the
is what
EA Empire strikes again. I think we will close on a potential dream project. We'll call it out right now and we'll reconvene at the end of the next generation and see if this came true. What's your one Star Wars game you want to come true? It can be a genre, it can be a particular developer, it can be a particular character you want to see. What do you want to see from this new era? Because for me, I want a pod racing game. I want a proper physics-based Wreckfest style pod racing game because I love Wreckfest so much. I'm gutted I didn't play it earlier. I should have championed that game for years at this point because it's brilliant.
You should have, man.
And I would totally have a pod racing game but just had immaculate physics. Get Criterion to do it, make it lightning fast and make the takedowns brutal as hell.
That's sick, to be fair. I would buy that. I would buy that for £70. But for me, off the top of my head, it's pretty basic. And I've just spat all over myself. I'm really sorry. No one can see this, but I just wanted you to know that I did that. Because it's a Mandalorian game, obviously. Even though I don't love the Mandalorian. I think it's just so perfect for a video game adaptation. But I want Remedy to make it because those guys are so good at third-person combat, man. And I want the Mandalorian's bounty hunter skill set to just be allowed to play in the Remedy Tools of Destruction player box, man.
Interesting. Going with Remedy makes me think of Jedi powers because in Control, she can just wrench a chunk of concrete off the wall and fling it at a dude's face. And I kind of wonder if that should be the way.
I'm changing my mind. That's good. So I'm going to defer to a bounty hunter game still made by the people who made Max Payne 3.
There he is.
The physicality of that game's excellent shooting mechanics.
That would be lovely. I would take slow motion laser blasts as well, like that weird face deformation tech that Max Payne 3 had. Give me that in a Star Wars game. But yes, let us know what you think of the future of Star Wars and also EA's time with Star Wars in review. Because I guess hopefully going forward, we'll get a whole bunch of more positive projects. But for now, I've been Scott Taylor. This has been Something, joined by Josh Brown.
I've enjoyed it, you know. I don't know what it is, but I've enjoyed my time with it, you know.
Yeah, possibly an expansion chat. We'll let you know next week. Till then, we'll catch you then. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.